Hey everybody, welcome to the Filmwork Podcast. We're back after a 7th month break. Luke, stop fucking laughing over me when I'm trying to introduce the motherfucker.
Sorry.
And hosting, here's Sean Kennedy.
I just love the fact that you came in so chirpy, like after seconds before we were just moaning about the connection issues we were having. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, everybody listening doesn't need to hear about that. I thought I'd, you know, try and, you know, boost morale a little bit, and then you're fucking sniggering like a bastard. Ugh. Anyway, as promised, we are back for a special podcast on Star Wars The Last Jedi. We've all been to see it. Oh, hi, I'm Stephen Hurst, by the way. With me is Ben Pegley.
Hello, hey.
And with us is Sean Kennedy.
Hello there.
There he is.
Excellent. So,
We're missing Mr. Droney, aren't we, who decided that he didn't want to do it, although he maybe
he did want to do it, but I think he had technical problems and knew better than to try and tackle them. other than what we had to go through. So we've all been to see the film. Ben and I had the good company of each other to see it. Sean saw it the morning before we did, so but we're all up to date. Has anyone been to see it a second time, actually? I just want to ask.
No, I tried to go Sunday morning, but I just couldn't make it happen.
No. I didn't try to go a second time is my excuse. I was going to, and then on both days I could, I just couldn't be bothered, which might be very telling. But we'll see. So yeah, I mean, everybody has by this point who's into it seen the film by now. We're sure, obviously, we're going to spoil the living hell out of it. We won't talk about the posters or the trailers, other than we largely, you know, try to avoid watching or seeing too much stuff before the release of the film. Certainly in the case of Ben, I saw the two trailers once each and then just ignored them. Posters, yep, cool, we'll have some of that, great. I'll let the guys talk about those things if they want to when they get into it, but let's start from the beginning, I guess, get right into it. And the opening shot, were we happy with the Star Wars crawl and then where it led from there? I will start with Sean because you saw it first.
Yes, I was it started with the evacuation, didn't it, of the rebel base?
Yes.
That's right. And there's a beautiful shot with the pods coming up to the ship, and the camera went down in the middle of them. Mm-hmm. That I thought was wonderful. Love the crawl. It's the Star Wars crawl. They haven't exactly broken the mold there. There is one kind of thing, and it's absolutely pointless pointing out, but you know when the crawl finishes and then the camera always goes downwards.
That's right.
As it was happening, I thought, wouldn't it be great if they went up for a change instead, like up into the action, just to do something different? But no, in fact, I mean that's the same for all of the space battle stuff in this film was wonderful, and including that opening shot.
I think if the camera crawled panned up the way you'd see letters again.
Well, no. So the crawl would stay stationary, and it's just space in the background. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So the stars seem to move the opposite way. Because it just dawned on me that...
Spacebox too.
Yeah, or something, I don't know. Or even side to side. Oh, pushing the weight out there.
Yeah.
Thinking just outside the box.
Just do a wipe cut.
Oh, God. The old Lucas wipe, yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I quite like the fact that the crawl had they, you know, I don't know how they do the crawl these days in terms of how they actually technically achieve it. It's probably just all in the computer. But, you know, obviously in the old days, they had to actually make a great big roll of paper and put it out on the floor and pan across it with the camera and then sort of, you know, process it that way. So you had all these kind of bumps and ripples in the paper, you know, which would kind of eventually make their way onto the lettering on the screen, and I thought there was a bit of that in this one. And I thought, oh, they've got kind of like, you know, they've like built some of that into it. Yeah. Like, that's quite good.
How big was this piece of paper? Was it like back in the olden days where it took four horses, you know, on treadmills to make it roll?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit like that. Yeah. Yeah. Out on the back lot at Bloody Fox.
Ding, 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 ding. Ben, how do you feel about the opening or shots going into the opening scene?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like I said, I wanted to see it the second time just to kind of cement a few of these things into my brain. But yeah, I quite liked it. I mean, I felt like it was the typical. They kind of followed the same, or a similar kind of approach as that the Empire did in terms of you know, you're never going to beat Episode Four, you know, that opening there. So don't even try. Yeah, go instead of going big, go kind of small, you know, in a way, which is sort of how it seemed, you know, rather than just, okay, we're not going to have some huge ship again or whatever, you know. And I thought that the Force Awakens opening was great, you know, in that with the Star Destroyer in silhouette against the planet, you know. So I thought, okay, they're not going to do that again or anything similar. So yeah, it's cool, it's fine. Yeah, it's a good start.
No, I remember once I had panned down and you had the sort of fleet in orbit, the camera sort of zoomed into them. And I remember the first thing that caught me that made it look weird, I thought, hang on a minute, are these ships coming towards me? Because the planet, because he's got part of the corner of the planet on the screen and it doesn't move at all. Or it doesn't look like it moves at all. So I thought, oh, hang on, we can't be zooming in then, because surely that would start getting smaller as well. But yeah, that's why I wanted to watch it for a second viewing, just to see if there was anything sort of faulty there with the shot that they put together. But it cuts away pretty quickly to on the planet where the people are evacuating. And that does kind of make you think, yeah, there's a little bit of sort of Empire going on there. And I guess that's one of the criticisms, is that some people have said there are some parallels to Empire. If you look for them, they are clearly there. But there's also clear parallels to Jedi in this movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad that I didn't get too... I mean, in fact, it's actually the Jedi sort of one that caught my attention the most in this movie. Mm. But I'm glad I didn't waste time when I was watching this film going, oh, is it like this one? Is it like that one? I think largely it is kind of its own beast. But if you feel the need to go, all right, is it similar to one of the films from the original trilogy? Fine, knock yourself out. But if it upsets you, then don't bother.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's the thing about it's second and third watching where I tend to do that. First watch, I sit back and let the film show me what it is. So I wasn't I wasn't sat there going, oh, that's like that, and oh, that's a reference to that. Unless it was really blatantly obvious, like it was in a couple of areas, like you've already said with Jedi.
Okay, well, anyway, so this scene obviously leads into your first battle sequence, and I thought it was terrific. The thing that that really stood out for me in this sequence is when you're following the girl that turns out to be the sister of the character Rose. I thought the whole sequence for her was terrific. I thought that was it makes you give a shit about a character who's only on screen for about 2 minutes and has zero dialogue. I thought, oh, we're in for a treat here. So yeah, I was well on board with the film at this point. I thought it was really well done. Looked terrific. Even though you do have Domhnall Gleeson doing a bit of his shouty screamy routine, which leads me a nice little segue to the question of what did you think about the humour at the beginning of this film, Ben?
Okay, so yeah, well, I mean, okay, so I actually wanted to listen to our Force Awakens podcast before doing this, and I didn't get a chance. But I was wondering, you know, I was thinking, oh, what did I say about this character or that character? And in terms of Domhnall,
you both said he was shit.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
I didn't
like him. And this time around, I liked him even less. Although I started liking him, again when Kylo started beating the shit out of him with the Force. when he became his bitch, that was pretty good.
Yep.
But no, I just, you know, that whole, it just, oh, you know, he's just, I think there's a, when you go back and watch Empire, or you know, even Jedi, but any of the original trilogy that has a fair amount of Imperial officers and you know, Captain Nida and Admiral this, that, and the other, right? When you look at those performances, they are clipped. They are that, you know, a certain stiff collared Nazi-ish, you know, that kind of way. But they're not stupid like that. They're not so overblown and just ridiculously performed. And he's just fucking just too much, you know. And that, and then the whole bloody phone call, you know, thing. You know, yes, this is, you know, fuck off.
He was very.
I hated it. That was the first thing that made me just go, oh, fuck, no.
I think that was the first sort of major risk or departure the film took, was to have that kind of humour. Because I don't think they've ever gone that broadly with the humour before, in that sort of sense, between in this kind of scenario. I mean, you know, the closest you get to it is Han Solo, you know, with his boring conversation anyway, but a completely different level of humour going on in both those scenes. But yeah, no, I did kind of go, oh, no, this is something weird, different. But I thought, you know why it didn't work for me? It's because it's mainly, the camera is mainly on Domhnall. Yeah. doing his panto routine of "Can't they hear me?" Whereas I think if they kept the camera on Poe, it would have been fine because he's more charismatic as a character, and then you'd follow that it's a joke from his point of view, and a bit better. I think it would have played better in terms of, oh, I'm still in a Star Wars film, as opposed to what kind of fucking stupid comedy am I in? That's the kind of joke that you get in a spoof of Star Wars.
Absolutely.
You know, at least Spaceballs, you know, technology failing and stuff like that, yeah. So it did feel a bit out of place.
Obviously, I don't know if you agree, but it slightly harkens to Han Solo in the very first Star Wars movie, doing the whole, you know, everyone's fine
ever
down
so
here.
Slightly.
And the fact that it, like you were saying, the fact that the camera's on him and then you've got this sort of radio-fied voice on the other end, and it's all, of course, in Harrison Ford's performance and charisma that makes it amusing. But I don't think Oscar Isaacs is anywhere near as charismatic as Harrison Ford. So,
I don't think he's given much of a chance to be as charismatic in this film, because his plot thread is
appalling.
Largely dealing with rebellion on his own ship.
Yeah, and basically being a douche. Yeah.
I don't want to go through the film scene by scene or plot thread by plot thread. We'll talk about them as it comes to us to talk about. So let's just get to what we did and what we didn't like about the film. And I just want to mention one thing that we'll see where this leads us. I found that the director very deliberately was doing some sort of weird sort of political social messaging throughout the film various different subjects. Mm-hmm. It's like when a director, you know, makes a film, they want to whip a little message at you here and there about this issue or that issue. It was doing way too much of that throughout, and it was starting to do my head in, especially when you get to the bloody casino planet and you've got the whatever those animals are that they use for racing, and then you've got the children in slavery that are used to run them, and then you've got the beasts that are being whipped and stuff like that. And I'm like, why the fuck is this film telling me that? Like, I fucking need to know that it's a bad thing. Did any of you lot pick up on any of that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And was it odd? Did it take you out of the film? Because there was other things. I didn't note them. I tried to note down all this. Is what a second viewing would have helped, so I could have noted down each of them, each and every single one of those little things that he did. Because it wasn't just that thing. There was other things that happened throughout the film. And I think the last one he did was when Finn was saved by Rose. Mm-hmm. And then she kisses him and she's like, oh, we shouldn't be, fighting against, sacrificing ourselves against the ones we hate. We should be fighting for the ones we love, or whatever the fuck it was she said. And I just wanted to throw up.
But, I mean, what's bothered me more about the sort of little political bits that he's put in there is actually the fallout of the film. There's an article on Den of Geek, you know, pointing out the obvious that, you know, it's 2017, and yes, you know, we've got strong female characters that actually have more than one dimension. That's great. That's wonderful. But, you know, you don't then need to
none of them are on Leia's ship.
Well, you don't then need to write a fucking article pointing out all these kind of obvious things and using it as an excuse to kind of slag off men's ineptitude with their emotions and things like this, which this article does. So whilst I certainly clocked it in the film, I've seen it in other films over the last sort of very recent last 5 years, so it didn't really take me out of the film or anything, but it's definitely sort of bothered me how it's been latched onto by reviewers and stuff like that, and you know, they're really only focusing on those elements, and it's like, well, there's a time and a place. Admittedly, a film needs to reflect the times, certainly, but you know, the story comes first, and this film, I'm not going to waffle too much, but like, many of the problems for me in this film were to do with the fact that it just I can't say that word for some reason, my brain's gone, like redundant little plot lines and characters that don't really need to be in there. You know, it needed to be far more streamlined. And just since we mentioned Poe Dameron, I mean, you know, he had nothing to do in this film, you know. And it's just it's almost like a shame that they turned him into this kind of character, this kind of why does this always happen to me when I'm talking? This mutiny character, this like childlike character who's sort of swatted down by his female superiors, and it's nothing to do with the fact that they're female. It's to do with the fact that they're older and they're admirals and they're more experienced, whereas he's obviously a soldier. And you know,
and they don't explain what their plans are.
Yeah, yeah, but they don't need to. A superior officer doesn't need to explain the plan to a grunt, effectively, which is what he is. You know.
All right, I'll flip us on to something that I thought was good. A character arc. The one character arc in this movie that worked for me pretty much from beginning to end, although he did disappear from the screen for a little while. And for me, that's Kylo Ren. I think he came out very well in this film. Comments?
What do you think, Ben?
Sniggerer?
I didn't need to see him with his shirt off.
Yeah, but I don't need to see Tom Cruise with his fucking shirt off, but it's going to happen. Just be glad he wasn't sitting on the can.
I'd have preferred it if he was.
All right.
Was he wearing a girdle as well in that scene? Was he doing a William Shatner in that scene?
No, I don't think so. I just think his it was his bad guy stride
buff moment. No, I'd agree with that. I think he had. I think he's. He was the, ironically the one character that that kind of didn't really bother me in terms of arc, which is funny because he was kind of quite annoying in Force Awakens, but he's kind of like emo little tantrums and stuff.
Well, he's still got that because I mean, like Ben's already pointed out, he has little tantrums towards General Hux at the end, just when the guy's not agreeing with him. And you know, to me, that doesn't say strong leader. So he's still got his temper tantrums that get the better of him. But I just like the fact that he's now in command. He's now fully, properly in command, which is where I get the Jedi reference from, because he took down his own master.
Well, no, but to be fair,
albeit for different reasons.
To be by that point, Hux had already, you know, gone behind his back with Snoke and everything, and. They have a little rivalry going on. That was even brought up in Force Awakens. That didn't bother
absolutely.
Me. Didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I'm surprised Hux made it out of the film alive, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
but
me too,
it was nice to see, you know, Kylo Ren's arc progress.
Yes,
you know, he as opposed to actually turning good. Although you have that little mini team up, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but he's not gone full good. He has gone full bad.
Yeah.
And he's fully intent on staying that way. And that's, for his character, the one thing that I wanted. I didn't want it to be, you know, history repeat itself.
No.
And God, with J.J. Abrams in charge of Episode 9, I hope he doesn't try and revert on that.
No, of course he will. Of course he will. That's what's going
to happen. Because he does have a moment of pause in this film, and that is when he comes to, when he's attacking the fleet, and he has the chance to take out his mum, which he doesn't do.
Yeah,
that is earlier in the arc, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he does. His arc is kill the past. That's where he's sort of heading towards.
Which is obviously the director's running theme throughout the whole thing, isn't it? With what he even does with the making of the film. But
okay. Right, well, I'll lead us on to the segue of Princess Leia in space. Speaking of, he tries to kill his mum. He fails to do so, but the two guys on his left, port and starboard, take a shot, and she is sucked out into space. I want to know what your immediate feelings were when that happened, and then your feelings about 10 seconds later. And we'll start with Ben.
Ben, definitely Ben, yeah.
Okay. So, I liked the lead up, I liked the approach, I liked the fact that he doesn't take the shot, they didn't do it. That was good. I liked that conflict. You know, that's all. That's very Star Wars. That's good. I like that. And then the two guys, like you say, either side of him take the shot, and it just happens in front of him. And when that, you know, all the bridge crew were sort of sucked out into the, you know, and you think, okay, that's the end of Leia. And I was like, oh no, they haven't killed her. Or you know, it's like, I was very disappointed. I wasn't emotional about that. I was pissed off. I was like, no, surely after all this, you know, after everything that's happened with Carrie Fisher dying and all the rest of it, I can't believe that is this, what we've had so far in this film is it, is all she's done for this movie. So I was pissed rather than emotional. I know our mutual friend Chris, he was very emotional. He was invested in it and was and what disappointed him was that that wasn't the end of her, that then we had to have what comes next. And I wasn't on that page at all. I was more pissed off that I was thinking, well, no, I want Leia to be throughout this movie, and even if she does end up being one of those casualties of the story, which we kind of all assumed that she might have to be, because obviously, you know, she hadn't filmed for episode 9, or if she had, it wasn't anything substantial enough to kind of, you know. So I think everyone went into the film thinking that, well, she's going to have to probably be written out somehow, either by dying or whatever.
I can comment there very quickly before you get on to your second half. Mm-hmm. I knew that she was making it out of the film alive. They've already said that she... Well, exactly. But, I mean, I had read that. She will not be in episode 9. She will be written out in that sense. But they were not going to change anything with this film, and that she does make it to the end. That I knew for a fact. So when that happened, like you, I wasn't as invested as our friend Chris, because I knew she wasn't dead. Right. But I did immediately think, how are they going to get out of this one?
Yes, I did as well. I thought exactly that, yeah.
So going back to you, Ben.
Okay. Well, all right. So, you know, I was thinking, oh my God, you know, like someone's going to swoop down, pick her up, or something's going to happen. You know, there's going to be some way. And I'm thinking, wow, how are they going to do this without it being totally crap? You know, you know, her face frosts up and all the rest of it. And, you know, and then she uses the Force to kind of, you know, fly back like a Disney fairy.
Like Mary Poppins.
I was just sitting there thinking, what am I seeing? What is this that we're watching here? And she just looked, and even the way they shot her in terms of her robes and everything sort of frozen in place. And, you know, however sort of realistic or that might be in order to, you know, to sell this idea of frozen in space, the fact that she was sort of frozen in this sort of, you know, pose with the robes, she just looked like a little Disney princess, and all she needed was a little wand and some dust, you know, pixie dust. Yeah, she was like Tinkerbell.
And I was like, exactly.
This is fucking ridiculous. You know, this is just, I was just, I couldn't handle it. I still can't. I think if I know that when I see that second screening, if I do end up managing to get there, I'm gonna see that and just, it's just gonna do my brain in like it did the first time. I'm just like, I can't believe that is what they decided to do.
Sean?
So your original question was what you thought at the time and then what you thought 10 seconds later, right?
Yep.
So unlike you, I didn't know that she makes it to the end of the film, but I obviously knew that Carrie Fisher had passed away at some point before, a year before this film had come out. So as far as I was concerned, immediately as it happened, I was like, oh, well, they didn't finish filming her parts and this is unfortunately how they've had to, you know, make her end happen in the film. And like Ben, I was, that's a bit of a shame. I was pretty shocked straight away that that was it. And then when she flies back, so I've got a thought here that this film is full of things I wanted to see in Star Wars at some point, which this film delivers, but not in any way that I imagined, and I'm still making up my mind if it's anything like how, you know, agreeable with me. And one of the things I really wanted to see was Leia use the Force, because she, like Luke, has to be, you know, the son of Anakin, daughter of Anakin, has to be, you know, powerful in some way. And I was really looking forward to that thing. I mean, I know that in Return of the Jedi, she's got like a mental connection to Luke and everything. But I don't really have a problem with the idea of her surviving something big like that. because she's force sensitive or whatever. But definitely the way that they've chosen to frame it and do it, and the freezing over thing, it wasn't for me. What bothered me the most is when she flies in and puts her hand on the door, Poe Dameron and crew run in and open the door, and then the screen cuts away straight away. And I mean, you know, being a sci-fi fan, I mean, I know you have to suspend your disbelief with Star Wars. You mentioned earlier, like in the space battle with the bombers, when those bomb doors open and all the bombs are rattling around, you know, in the vacuum of space, that kind of little thing kind of winds me up. But no, I just, it's like, no, you open a door in a spaceship and everyone's going to get sucked out, aren't they? Thank you. It depends on if you're on board with a film, I guess you could say, well, she's like shrouded herself in the force, like a force bubble shield thing, like you get on Legends and all that.
Force field,
all that kind of shit. I haven't quite made my mind up yet. I do agree with Ben. I think like the way it was visualized, presented was definitely
there are things in this film that clearly are going to require multiple viewings before you either decide, actually it's not as bad as I thought, or oh, I can handle that now, or well, actually that's amazing, or bollocks, this is just bullshit. That one, I don't know how I'm going to feel about that one down the line. There are other things in this film that I'm pretty sure I'm always going to hate, like whatever the bloody racing thing was in the middle of the film.
We'll get there.
But let me move us on to actually, relating to that, so another little segue. So, all right, Leia weirdness out of the way. How do you feel about the fact that Admiral Ackbar is dead and he gets literally no send-off? I was thrilled because I hate that character. Because they're like, shitloads of us are dead. This person, Admiral Ackbar, this person. I was like,
didn't bother me at all. I was never really attached to the character.
Just to juxtapose that, my joy that Admiral Ackbar was dead was short lived because then the next fucking shot, you see Neen fucking numb sitting there, alive and well.
I didn't mind. Well, you know, I didn't mind the whole Admiral Ackbar thing. You know, it's fine.
He was only ever a background character that fans locked onto and liked anyway. You know, it doesn't really. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how he got as much fame as he did just from the fucking the line. It's a trap. Ugh. Anyway,
well, exactly. Yeah,
you mentioned that one, and then people start shouting at you, and it bugs me.
Well, it's like it's just
anyway.
A meme,
Sean,
can
you detect the joy in Ben's voice as he talks about the film?
Yeah, I mean, I think I told you, Stephen, didn't I, when we were talking over the weekend?
Yeah.
I left the cinema that afternoon, that Friday morning. That Friday afternoon, literally, and the first thing that came into my head is Ben is not going to be happy. and of course,
the audience score for this film is much lower than the critic score. And it's weird because I saw the critic score when it came out, I was like, yay, we can't lose. Anyway, let's move us on to something else. Right, what else can I pick up on here? Let's try. Oh, lightsaber questions for Ben.
Yes.
I want to save all. No. All right, we'll get into this question, but we'll talk about Luke himself in a bit. Because obviously he's a large component of this film. But I'll get to the one thing that I was dying to see in this film, and I did see it, but it was in a fucking flashback, and that's the green lightsaber. My theory is that he has destroyed that lightsaber at the very least once he got to that island, if not before.
Are you asking me if I agree with that or not?
How you feel about the fact that there's very little green lightsaber action in the film? Because for me, the green lightsaber means a lot. It means more to me than the blue one. And this fucking blue lightsaber they make a big deal out of. Grrr.
the green saber has a massive fan base, you know, myself included. The only thing that I cared about was if we did see it, I wanted it to be the hero saber and not the V2 saber, which is the one he's actually wielding most of the time in Jedi. It's one of those stupid things that the close-up saber that Vader looks at is not the one that you see him actually wielding most of the time. So the one that sat on the Emperor's throne is a different, slightly different prop. which has always bothered people like me. But and that was just, and that was really just because the Hero one was hard to hold. It was a stupid great box control box on it, and you couldn't wave it around very easily. But what I did want to see was if we saw the green saber, I wanted it to be correct to Jedi, which it seemed to be. You know, they haven't fucked around with it. I mean, you know, this was the thing with all the other films in that they've always had this, given themselves this license to fuck about with things that you've seen before that should be the same. And they didn't do that with either the blue saber or the green one. And when he ignites it in the flashback, it's the right noise as well. So, you know, stupid shit like that is I appreciate that. Whether or not he's, you know, I mean, the thing that this ties into for me was, and I know it's kind of jumping to the end of the movie, but when the projection of Luke appears later on, he's wielding the blue saber, which that's is right. kind of weird.
That's what I was
and obviously
say.
He's made himself look younger and stuff. But I thought it was weird. I thought it was weird that he did that because it would seem to go against the fact that Ren knows the blue saber has been smashed because he pulled it apart earlier.
But
in
Luke
films.
Probably doesn't know that.
Well, yeah, sure, but so.
But he knows that Rey has got the blue one, and she's offered it to him. So if he's destroyed the green one, then therefore, potentially the blue one is on hand.
yeah, but you see, this would it would seem to. But the trouble is, for me, it's like Kylo should know then that that's weird because that saber's been destroyed.
You know, no, absolutely.
Not, you know, so it's, I don't know why they would have done it that way. But anyway, it would have been. I would have been far happy if he'd had the green one. Fucking, you know, come on.
Oh, me too.
Yes. But you know, anyway. But yeah, maybe he's maybe he's destroyed it, or maybe it's sitting in the pilot's chair of the X-wing that's submerged on the at the island. You know, I mean, he didn't destroy that. He's
No, he has destroyed it because he's got parts of the X-Wing as part of his bloody hut.
Well, whatever, okay.
The rest of it's the main body of the X-Wing is still The main body of the X-Wing is still definitely under the water. I mean, I spotted the door being part of the X-Wing as well.
Part of the wing is his front door.
Yeah, that's right, I think that...
I think he didn't just submerge it. I think it's there and it's not going to... function anytime soon because he has literally cut himself. He, like I said, he went there to die, so therefore he has cut off any possibility of going back. I think if anything, we needed a shot of an X-Wing, you know, completely trashed as opposed to just under the water.
Well, that just means it's a setup for something later, isn't it? I mean,
Well, the setup is that he you think, oh, maybe he's actually there because he had a ship under the water, but he's not. He's actually had to project himself there to do his bit of business.
Oh, maybe, you see, I think that the green saber is still around, and I think that in the next film, Rey will end up with it.
I'd be very happy if it is still around. But I mean, all right, this is a segue onto that plot line, and for me, it's the most interesting plot line of the film. I think it's the most interesting plot line of the film for Ben as well, from the brief discussion we had outside the cinema. Actually, you didn't fucking say anything, did you?
No. I couldn't talk after I came out of that preacher's house.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I can't.
Oh, here you go. Moment of comedy, everybody. Whilst there was six of us standing outside the cinema having a conversation, well, five of us and Ben eavesdropping, a lot of people were a bit unsure on how they felt about it, but then I let slip with a bit of information. I basically said to them, the screening of the film we have just seen, which was The Last Jedi, I thought was better than The Force Awakens.
You did say that.
And then Ben choked on his water that he was in the middle of drinking.
I did.
What I meant by that was I had a better cinema experience, because the cinema experience of The Force Awakens annoyed me because it was such a fucking rip-off of Episode 4. It wasn't that I didn't like the film or that I thought the film was worse, but that first cinema experience I had, well, only cinema experience I had with The Force Awakens, sort of half annoyed me, which is why I gave it 3.5 stars when we did the podcast.
I'm almost exactly the same, actually, Stephen. And I think The Last Jedi is going to be different for me. So with The Force Awakens, first time I saw it, I was like, what? You've just made Star Wars again, like, with like literally. Whereas it's grown on me since then a little bit. And The Last Jedi, immediately I was like, oh, I'm entertained. I found that entertaining. And now as I'm dissecting the plot and thinking about it more and more, I'm just picking more and more things that kind of bother me about it, and I think that it's going to lose a few marks for me.
I was tearing up in the first half an hour on many places because I was just so happy that things were going, you know, pretty well. You know, a few bumps along the way, but the tone of it sort of seemed, you know, right for the most part. The plot was getting going. We're jumping between these different storylines, and when Luke first comes into the picture, I guess we should talk about that now, when he just tosses the lightsaber behind him, and when that drama starts unfurling, I was thoroughly entertained. So I was all in it.
I loved that. That is one of the things I love in the film, the way, because people have been waiting for 2 years for the conclusion of that end scene. What's he going to say? What's he going to do? She's holding that classic lightsaber out. I just love the fact he just takes it and throws it over his shoulder. It's just literally...
Ben, do you like that?
Yeah, do you like that, Ben?
No.
It's just, to me, it's just a big middle finger to all of the fan theory videos on YouTube and the ridiculous over-the-topness that they've gone on to. And, of course, that same feeling happens again with another large moment in this film that we'll talk about later. Yeah. But, yeah, bring us on to Luke, then. Let's talk about Luke.
Okay, well, that moment happens, and then I guess... Because here's the, you know, it's like, okay, well, at some point, you know... She wants to be trained. He's going to go, no, go away. I'm having nothing to do with it. And it's mainly more about why he doesn't want to do it that we discover. So obviously the why he doesn't is that he created Kylo Ren. And he sees the same kind of strength of power in her that he saw in him. And that makes him very fearful of training someone again and failing again. I thought those revelations were handled pretty well. And I thought Mark Hamill played the part, you know, very well.
Very well.
Quite beautifully in some places. But the moment amidst all that got me the most was in when R2-D2 played him the original Princess Leia hologram message from Episode 4. Uh-huh. That's probably the highlight for me in the entire movie. That's probably my favourite moment. So it worked for me, and I thought, yep, that's good. And that's what urges him to go and try and train Rey. Which doesn't last very long, because the moment that he sees the extent of her power, that's when he wants to walk away again, and then she ends up having to leave. So it's all a bit anticlimactic in that sense. You know, someone has gone there to be a learner of someone who wants to be shown, you know, what to do with what they've got, and essentially the guy sort of gives it a half-assed attempt and then just goes, nope.
So that really bothered me, because I really thought that they were going to not do The Empire Strikes Back here. I really thought, you know, with one of the bones of contention...
Well, he didn't. He gave up.
Well, Yoda no, didn't. One of the Yoda. Bones of contentions that a lot of people have with that idea is that Luke goes there with some degree of power and then leaves unexpectedly early before his training's finished. And then in the next film, he's killing people with his mind and everything, you know. And I really thought that they were going to do, you know... Like, I'm saying this for comical effect, but like a Rocky montage, you know, or something like that. They were gonna, you know, make it appear as though Rey's on this rock for a long time, or for at least enough time for Luke.
How long was she there?
In part, not long at all, because whilst this is all going on, the Rebel fleet's being chased. The slowest chase scene in cinematic history.
Oh God! The Austin Powers chase scene.
Yeah.
How long do you reckon all this was? Is this over the space of a couple of days?
Yeah, it's a couple of days, because there's nighttime and daytime a few times, isn't there?
Because Ray's out there, you know, like doing her press ups and shit, and pissing about it for a staff and then the lightsaber.
I suppose they did everything they needed to do. You know, if they didn't dick around so much with the comical moments like those bloody, like, housekeeping nun-looking aliens and all of that kind of stuff.
Let's not forget the porgs.
Well, the porgs didn't really bother me, to be honest with you.
The porgs actually only bothered me at the very end when they're all over the cockpit flying and smacking against the windows and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was unnecessary dumb humour in what was meant to be, you know, a thrilling climactic sequence.
Well, it's totally those.
That's the only time when I was like, get them the fuck out of my face.
They didn't bother me. I still don't know what I think about. They didn't bother me as much as I'm trying to make my mind up about those caretaker aliens. It just seemed a bit, you know, the end of The Force Awakens, you've got this wonderful kind of mystique around, you know, the idea of Luke on this isolated planet in the middle of nowhere, and you know, he's there and meditating or whatever. And then, no, the reality is that he's like on a fucking rock with the Muppets, literally, you know, with an entire team of cute little aliens and everything. And it's actually really busy. And it kind of, that kind of destroyed for me, like I said, the mystique of the character.
Yeah.
I didn't really like the way Luke was handled at all, to be honest with you.
No, I didn't like it. Well, yeah. for the way they did it, I think Mark Hamill gave it his best shot. But no, this is not the Luke Skywalker movie I watched. Well, it ended the way I feared, that he was just, that he died. I'm fed up of bloody directors today killing my fucking heroes.
It could have been, for me, the Luke arc could have been redeemed with the inevitable, he comes to his senses, goes to help the rebels, and then finally you get this wonderful older but Luke Skywalker hero moment where you really see the extent of how powerful he is now. And then that fell flat on his face as well. You know, I wanted to see him, you know, whip out the green lightsaber and chop down a load of stormtroopers and, you know, force destroy an AT-AT or AT, whatever they're called, or whatever. Something absolutely big like that. And it was just, no, what we got is...
And instead, watching Iron Man, but not in his suit.
We got a digitally youthened Luke Skywalker with the wrong lightsaber, not even...
Phoning in.
He wasn't even there. disappointed.
As for those porgs, you've also got that's another thing where I was like, there's the director whipping message with Chewbacca being led, you know, made to feel guilty for clearly murdering and toasting one of them that he's about to eat.
Didn't mind that. I thought that was quite funny. Actually,
it was quite humorous, but like I said, the director was doing too much of that sort of shit, either seriously or comedically.
He was, yeah.
The only
problem with the porg thing, with the eating part of it, is that, you know, is that they made the porgs sentient, you know, to a degree. That they, you know, they're exhibiting emotion. They're not, you know, and I think he probably did that on purpose as well, in terms of, you know, this whole idea is very prescient in this idea of do animals have feelings and all that shit. Are they actually sentient in any way? I did think that, you know, that's a kind of an odd thing to have Chewie, you know, kill and barbecue a sentient being.
That's why I found it so funny, because he wasn't there like with a spear or something, like about to hunt one of them before he's guilted into not doing it. He's literally, he's already killed and skinned
He's
it
already killed one and cooked and it. Roasted it, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it's a waste of food because he doesn't eat it, you know. That's the real crime here. But the whole sentient animal thing, I mean, that is Star Wars. I mean, you know, Star Wars has made, you know, robots sentient, even the little mouse droids with little personalities and stuff like that. I mean, I know we get a lot more of that kind of stuff in the prequels and stuff, but even still, it's still a very Star Wars thing to do, I think.
Right, I am going to chop us off this and put us in another direction briefly. We can come back to Luke later on as we talk about like the climax of the film and what have you. Quick question that I want to ask. This is something that happens throughout the movie. The Force telephone, the Force Skype call that Ren and Kylo were on throughout the movie. Clearly, they've got a better connection than us three have. How did you feel about that?
Ben.
Sean, go.
Oh my god! Are you just seething, Ben, so much that you just can't bring yourself to provide commentary?
He's very quiet, isn't he?
He is. All right, I'll go very quickly, Ben, and then I insist. It's one of the things I like about the film. I didn't mind it at all. I liked Rey and Kylo Ren's threads in general throughout the film. And I also was fine with the explanation, with the fact that Snoke had manipulated that, had set that up to happen.
But had he?
Well, you know, again, it all gets to the theory thing. There's millions of theories still about Snoke, about the fact that, well, he was a projection, he's not dead, and all this kind of stuff, which maybe we'll talk to when we talk about the throne room. But Have you not heard that? There's the people going, no,
there's no... And I don't want to fucking discuss it. He was there and he's fucking dead. He was there and he's dead. Thank God for that. And I don't give a fuck how he got his powers or where he came from. He's gone, and that's
Thing. I don't either anymore. That's like it's wonderful the way that they dealt with that, because it's like, oh, well, actually, no, it's not relevant to the story. Really, the real villain is Kylo Ren, and we've developed his character to the point where he really is a villain now.
I reckon it was also that people hated the character of Snoke so much they were like, let's write him out. And the other most obvious choice in that direction is what they did with Phasma as well. All of fucking 2 6-screen minute time that she got.
It was very Boba Fett-ish for me, that was. It's kind of like, you know, that kind of character that's quite popular and cool in a way. I don't know whether or not you think she's cool. I don't really have an opinion either, but the fact that on screen for not very long and goes down. I'm happy with Snoke being like having a background that's explored in comics for those who are interested. But I'm happy with how he was in the film. But no, the communication thing happened, the telepathic communication, I thought it worked really well in the context of the story. I thought it harks to Leia and Luke in Return of the Jedi again, and it was necessary for the development of their story. It was probably the tightest bit of storytelling in the film, to be honest with you. And that was certainly the plot the line that really everyone cared about. I mean, the rebels are in danger. They're always in danger in every Star Wars film. That's a given. That's what people want. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see her and Luke training her, and then, you know, her going off to have some kind of thing with Kylo Ren where, you know, is he, isn't he, and then ultimately is the villain. I like that. That's the part of the film that gives it a few stars for me.
Yeah, it's the only thing that I thought was, pretty decent, really. I don't mind the Force... I don't mind the Force calls, you know, that's okay. I didn't need the shirt off. Can you put a shirt on? I didn't need the fucking, you know, the teen Twilight scene, kind of thing with that. Fuck off. We've already established that you can see each other. That's no reason to have a contrived shirt off coy female thing going on. So I didn't like that, but I liked that. I mean, I liked the fact that they had this, you know, there is this point at which the two characters come together in the elevator on the way to see the big bad, who isn't really the big bad as we find out, but, you know, on the way. And you do have that moment where, you know, they are saying, look, this is either going to be, you know, Ren goes light or Rey goes dark. You know, there's no other thing. And I was quite into that. And then the fact that what actually happens is that their established direction just becomes underlined. Yeah. I thought it was quite good. I thought it was like, I'm into that. Ren is the bad guy. Great. And Rey is the good guy. Okay, great. Mm. You know, for the moment. I was fine with that. Snoke. Yeah, I liked the fact that he bought the fucking plot. You know, just that's it, over. Don't care about him. I liked that. I didn't really think the battle with the Praetorian Guard was that great. I thought they were a bit clunky.
They were shit.
Yeah, they.
Every time they like were alert, they pulled ninja poses.
Mm. Yeah, it was all
just
bit...
in the background, and it's like, well, one of them walk up to one of these guys and kick him in the fucking ghoulies next time they do that. That really, really annoyed me, the way that they were showing off with their posing before they actually did any fucking fighting.
Yeah,
the fight itself, I didn't actually mind so much. It was very modern in the way that it was done and put together, especially with the way that it ends as well, with a very sudden last death when Rey throws the lightsaber towards Kylo and he catches it, turns it on and off very quickly to get the guy in the head behind him.
Yep.
Fine, fair enough.
Yep.
I can have a bit of that.
I think the problem is that, you know, when you create these, you know, scarlet-robed, armoured, you know, guards, it obviously makes you think of the Emperor's guards in Jedi, you know, and you know, these guys never did anything. They stood there completely, you know, you know, completely sort of unmoving, you know, they just walked in and out, and you just didn't know who, what they were, or what they could do, or, you know, they were completely mysterious. At least within the confines of the films, rather than comics and extended universe stuff. And so they were kind of all the more sort of, you know, enigmatic because of that, and potentially dangerous because of that. And I liked that. And so I was kind of hoping that these guys would be more like that and just be completely badass once they did move, but not start pulling fucking Bruce Lee poses and bloody, you know. I mean, it was like, oh, really? These guys are shit.
The other thing that wound me up about that is, all right, Rey's new and she would be spinning the lightsaber around and everything, but we've seen in when Kylo Ren was introduced to this franchise, he stopped a fucking blaster bullet with the Force for it, and then had a chat and then walked off. You know, he in this scene, he just would have choked everyone in the room in one hit. He wouldn't have even fired his lightsaber up, you know? And I know that would have been a bit anticlimactic as well. So then as the fight was happening, I was thinking, okay, well, these are the Knights of Ren. These are sort of Jedi trained as well. But then why are they ninjuring around the place? Like, Did you, Stephen, did you clock, I don't know if you found the parallel. Well, it's not a parallel at all. It's just
Adrian Edmondson. Yeah, I clocked him straight away at the beginning of the film.
No, observation. Do you remember Gary Oldman's armor in Dracula?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks, it really reminded me of their suits. I quite liked the lightsaber choreography in that scene with Rey especially. I thought it was much more in between the prequels and the original Return of the Jedi, basically what we've seen before. It wasn't too over the top with fucking cartwheels and everything, and it was kind of believable. And there's that, it's a really good moment where she chops one of them up the back. I thought that was quite cool. They've obviously put a lot of thought into making the lightsaber fighting look a little bit less like fucking Anakin versus Obi-Wan in the Revenge of the Sith.
Right. Yeah. I have some other things to ask you guys about to get your sort of quick responses on. Well, one thing very quickly that I was very happy about, another happy thing. Actually, I was annoyed when the character appeared, but so happy that that's all they had in the film. And that was the very, very brief call from Maz Kanata, whatever the hell her name is. But her screen time bugged the living shit out of me. I thought it was really unnecessary and over the top that she was doing this phone call whilst in mid-battle or something.
It was shit. It was so shit.
But it was basically all she did was say, oh, by the way, you need to go find this person who wears this clothing in this place. Well, it was really unnecessary. So,
that entire plot was pointless, though. The entire...
But she was pointless in the bloody last film as well. I didn't like her. But again, like with Captain Phasma, glad that her role was reduced right down to, like, a cameo.
Yeah. I mean, the voice actress must have had like a contract to be in both films or something. That's the only thing I can think of.
I'll bet you any money that she'll be back in the next one. The girl that did Mask
and
Out.
And if they don't,
don't mind the character. I have to say, I didn't mind the character at all in Force Awakens. I thought she was perfectly reasonable. But you know, I enjoyed her character. In fact, I feel the same way about this particular, you know, the way they handled it in here, and of course the fact that whole section, that whole kind of going off to find a codebreaker on Casino World, you know, it's like, okay, I just don't need any of that. I don't want any of it. And I know that ultimately they just
need one anyway.
Ultimately you need to, you know, it's the introduction of the boy with Force powers at the end that you know, that is I guess the only reason to have gone there.
They could have
the boy that looks like 11 from Stranger Things.
They could have done that anywhere though, couldn't they, you know?
Of course, but that is the only reason why that now justifies
that
itself.
The entire section of the film was like the fucking it reminded me of The Phantom Menace as well. Which I didn't really.
It reminded me of prequel trilogy.
It was very prequel stuff, yeah. And the comedy again, and again the politics as well.
And film was already too long. It's like literally, if you took that entire chunk out, the film would be. It would feel much smoother, and you know, the narrative. And the only reason it's there, really, aside from what you said there, Ben, is the fact that it gives Finn something to do in the film. And that's another thing. It's like, well, you've got a character you don't know what to do with in the story that you've written, then just don't have him in it. You know?
Yeah.
Or write
just leave
a story.
Him in his fucking coma. Yeah. Have him wake up at the end.
Yeah, or something like that. Or write a story where you actually do utilize the characters that you've carefully written and all the rest of it. And then the real kick in the teeth to that is, like you said, Stephen, the fact that the entire fucking expedition that they go on was irrelevant to the story. They didn't even need to do it.
Absolutely.
And it renders Benicio del Toro's character is obviously pointless as well. You know,
Oh, he'll be back and all, I'll bet. Right, let's get off of that. I don't want to talk about Casino Planet. I mean, everyone out there who's seen this film fucking hates it, so do we. Yeah. Jedi Library, any comments? Ben, how do you feel about the Jedi Library books and scrolls and shit? Yeah. Which are now safely aboard the Millennium Falcon. Oh, and let's not forget the Force Tree.
Yeah. I guess my only thought my thought at the time, I mean, we haven't talked about Yoda yet, but, you know, my thought at
we'll
the time...
We'll segue onto Yoda, so
we'll
feel
segue
free.
Onto him. Okay, my thought at the time was that if this place is so fucking important to the Jedi, why wasn't Yoda there? Why was he on Dagobah instead? You know, why didn't he just go there? If that place is unknown to the Empire, it's safe, you know. Why isn't he just there? But anyway, I mean, obviously we know why, because it's a new thing. But, you know, I didn't need any of that, you know. I mean, the great theme with this movie for me is how much of it I didn't need as a Star Wars fan, you know,
Who told Luke about these books is what I want to know.
No, I don't know. It's, God knows. Yeah. I did like the subvertive, the subversion of the whole, gravitas of the place with that Yoda does. I mean, I know we're going to segue into that, this whole thing about, fuck them, you know, they're not important. I did like those aspects of that part, but it's always difficult when you're kind of, you know, I mean, it's like if you've ever watched the, I can't remember the name of them, not the Bad Lip Reading, but the other one, the guys does the trailers, Honest Trailers or whatever they are, you know, and they did the one of Empire, and he says in that one, he says, you know, so, you know, this either means that George Lucas didn't have everything as worked out as he likes to say he does, or he's into some weird shit and he has all the scenes of Leia kissing Luke, you know. and the whole tree thing smacks of that kind of thing. It's like, you know, you have this, you know, you've got seven movies now, or, you know, six, yeah, well, three, you know, that kind of set up this universe, and you sort of, you know, you'd have thought some of this stuff would have been mentioned before if it was important, and so it's very difficult to then add these things that are supposed to be very important because they don't seem three-dimensional enough.
But the question is, of course, did Yoda know at that point that Rey had already nicked the books or whatever, and that's why he was so nonchalant and burnt the tree down himself?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
There's another thing. What do you think about a Force ghost being able to use powers in the real world like that?
Strike lightning.
Yes.
And donk Luke on the head with his cane.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. He did. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
I think that they just raise questions and about the logic of something they've already set up. I mean, you break the logic of something you've already set up, and it no longer makes sense, then it just confuses the viewer, or irritates them. If you break your own logic rules, it's irritating. I mean, the question for me all along was, if they're so bloody powerful, even after death, then why are they of no fucking use?
Oh, yes, yes.
Because what did Ben Kenobi ever fucking do for us after he died?
Yeah.
Apart from sweet fuck all. Just advice from the grave. But I was like, okay, fine. He can do that. He can come to him as a voice or as a vision for a short space of time. He's not following him around all the time, you know? It's only in short spaces that he will appear and then disappear. And Yoda, the same. And his dad, I guess, as well, at the very end of Jedi. But yeah, to be actually physically interact and make lightning strike, you got to maybe they'll give us some more in the next film to explain a bit more of that. But if they're just doing it for the sake of being fucking cool, or to move plot along, then it's like, nah, I don't think you should have done that. It causes more aggravation in the mind than it does enjoyment.
The trouble is, it renders the passing or dying of a character irrelevant. Because it means that, okay, well, so you know, a Jedi can, you know, move into the Force and all the rest of it, but still have agency in the real world and not, it doesn't matter. You know, in fact, it's probably better because they're more invulnerable or whatever. You know,
exactly.
It's like the bloody Rapture. it's like you say, when you set up a certain, you know, goalposts and then you start breaking those rules, that is a difficult thing to do, because it does confuse the viewer in it's not a good way to operate. It's like in Star Trek, you know, when, you know, in Star Trek, they always had the thing where you could never transport at warp.
Yeah.
You know, that was the big rule. You cannot use a transporter at warp. And then, you know, sooner or later, they end up doing it, you know, and it's like, fuck you. Right.
The most annoying thing about that was the distance that they transport.
Yeah, all the way from Earth to the Klingon homeworld.
Well, whatever, it's just ridiculous. Even in the anyway, we're not talking about Star Trek right now. But
anyway,
one of the things I did like,
well, the other sci-fi franchise JJ wants to fuck with.
Yeah,
yeah. So one thing that I was very happy about was the not that I was ever asking for it. It was only ever on my mind because it kept coming up in news items, and that was, who are Rey's parents? And the explanation that we're given here. Hey, they could still say it's not true, but I really hope it is, because the explanation for who her parents are makes the world, the universe, even that much bigger, that she is not a Skywalker or a Kenobi. She is a nobody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Really liked that.
I'm the same as you. I really hope that... I mean, it's cool to have fan theories and all the rest of it, but the thing that makes me think that they're definitely not going to go back on the... Well, hopefully Abrams doesn't. And she turns out to be somebody, you know, the daughter of somebody we know. But is the last shot of the film, of course, where you've got this random slave child exhibiting Force powers? Because that reinforces the idea that, you know...
It's random.
Yeah, and like Snoke said, you know, because Ren had become so powerful in the dark side, the Force balances it by, you know, having an equal, you know... Yeah. It's the Matrix thing, isn't it, really? But
It's not like we heard, you know, from Ben Kenobi that he got it from his dad and he got it from his dad and he got it from his dad.
Yeah, that's right. They're not even supposed to have kids, are they?
It is random. It's only the... Well, exactly. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Naughty Anakin.
Anakin, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what? I kind of hear what you're saying, but I'm still a little bit not 100% on board with that. In terms of so she's nobody. You know, I'm like, no, actually,
she's somebody, Ben.
No, I think I'd rather she was somebody. You know, in terms of like her heritage, rather than within the. Universe rather
than just
random.
Are you going to groan if she turns out to be Kylo Ren's sister?
Yeah.
I don't want them to do that. But I mean, I was kind of, you know, there obviously were a ton of theories on who she could be. And, you know, I thought the most, one of the most kind of ones that seemed quite interesting and definitely in terms of how they choreographed her lightsaber thing was that she's a Palpatine. You know, I thought that was interesting, very interesting, because that is exactly how she uses the saber in Force Awakens, in those weird forward lunges that Palpatine does, and only he does. And you know, I thought that was an interesting thing. I mean, ultimately, it's like, fuck, whatever. You know, as long as the character's good and her story is good, you know, which in this film I do like. Like I said, the only thing I really like about this film was that I thought it had its main characters, other than Boyega and, you know, and Poe. You know, I thought that I thought that Rey and Kylo and Luke. Much as there were aspects of Luke's arc that I don't like at all, least they had an arc, you know, and it definitely goes from A to B to C and has an agenda to reach, you know, which was good, because obviously a lot of the time that's a bit lacking.
Poe definitely had his nuts snipped in this film, and Finn as well to an extent. But I mean, but they don't it's not like they allow people to be heroic in this film or even try to do anything heroic without it having either dire consequences, because with Poe, it was always dire consequences of his actions. You know, a lot of people die by him trying to, you know, by doing this bombing run, and then but he wants to do this, he wants to do that, and it just causes more and more death. And then even with Finn at the end, when he tries to make the sacrifice himself to destroy this machine, he is then stopped from doing that. So it's kind of like the message is that you know, they don't want the heroes to do anything heroic in this film. And even Luke doesn't do anything terribly heroic other than cause diversion at the end. So it's weird. I mean, but I'm sure it's something they'll go back on in the next film. You know, all the heroes will start be doing remarkable shit all over again. But here it's like they wanted to focus on the ordinary aspects of people as opposed to making people bigger and more extravagant and more heroic and silly ways. They wanted to show consequences and stuff like that. And for Poe, it just unfortunately turned for me into a bit of a sloppy, repetitive, sort of boring narrative in the middle of the film when he was stuck on this fleet. Whereas for Finn, it was just thought, I mean, it wasn't John Boyega's fault. It was just, he was just stuck in a shit storyline. Just an absolute shit storyline. But no, you're right. Rey, Luke, and Ren have the better time here. And it shows. But yeah, I think just sort of thinking about it, the problem with this film is also the end for me. Yes, there's hope in the universe. There will be more Jedis at some point, but is that what we're looking forward to? I mean, it doesn't leave any lingering questions that I'm dying to have answered for Episode 9, which is going to be the closing part of a trilogy. It doesn't feel like the second part of a trilogy to me. I'm not geared up for an ending now. I'm just like, well, okay, the Rebel Alliance, I'm sure, will start to grow and get bigger again, but then again, so will the bad guys. They'll just grow and get bigger again and build even bigger ships.
And
maybe we will get some more Jedi, or Rey will become even more powerful, and then blah blah blah. But I'm not excited for any of that. Are you guys excited for anything in the next film?
I think when I spoke to Chris Stroney on that Friday afterwards, he had seen it that afternoon, I think, and I spoke to him that evening. I said to him, what did you think, Chris? And I recall saying to him, you know, it somehow doesn't have that middle film syndrome that you get in and I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. Because you're absolutely right. It doesn't really. It's almost like a standalone thing, entity. I don't, you know, I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, Luke's gone. Obviously, he's gonna be Force ghosting it up in the next film blatantly.
Yeah.
And Rey's, you know, the full extent of her power, especially with the rock scene at the end. You know, it's like, wow, there we are. She's now a Jedi. Great. Snoke's dead. You know, they're gonna have to off screen kill Leia. You know, it's like, well, who am I left caring about? Finn, who had a shit story in this film,
he'll be leading the resistance. He'll be doing whatever Leia was supposed to do. Yeah,
something like that.
Take over there.
It is. It's true. It's there's nothing really to kind of lock onto, to look forward to.
Yeah. Or even storyline wise,
and especially knowing that J.J. Abrams is helming the next one, that's even worse. You know,
and he's rubbish at endings as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Oh.
God, just hope he doesn't fucking get some of his lost buddies to help co-write it with him. Ben, are you? Do you have any anticipation for anything?
No.
Yeah, and it hurts me to hear you. Well, for the last hour and a half talking, because you just sound. I've never heard you this despondent.
Well, you know,
about Star Wars, it feels like it's been killed for you again. Has this new trilogy killed Star Wars?
No. What, for me or generally?
Both.
Well, for me, no. I mean, you know, I think that I agree with what Sean just said in that the film doesn't feel like a middle film in a trilogy, and you're right, it doesn't, and I think that's precisely because of how so many things were tossed away, you know, like the lightsaber, you know, in this film. So many expectations set up in the first film were just subverted, which you can enjoy for you know, for what they are. But it does have the effect of, okay, well, so that's been shut down. This has been shut down. That's, okay, Snoke's nobody. Rey is nobody. You know, you know, so it doesn't, it has made those statements, and there's a cost to doing that. And the cost seems to have been to kind of shut down some of that kind of expectation on what might be the next step for all these people. You know, like, like you say, you don't really care what Finn's going to do. Who cares? Because he's not done anything in this film.
Poe, exactly.
Whatever. You know, I mean, yeah, so I don't really know. I mean, I kind of, I am quite sort of, you know, there was some stuff in this movie that is possibly some of the most, you know, some of the most gorgeous visual Star Wars things ever. You know, I mean, I thought the you know, the whole way they visualized and the sound design of the whole, you know, hyperspace into the fleet thing was was amazing. You know, that was just jaw-droppingly great. You know, I thought, yeah, that's nice. But they ruined it by having someone pilot the fucking ship. And you think, well, why? They don't have to, can't they just press a button and then fuck off? You know, why does she have to be on the ship? It's so contrived. You know, this whole idea of this, you know, Austin Powers speed chase, you know, this, you know, reminded me of the guy going, in front of the steamroller, you know, he's 30 feet away. And you think, why aren't there fucking Star Destroyers just bamfing into fucking their way right in front of them? You know, why are they just doing this chase? You know, I don't understand why they're letting that happen. You know, the only thing I'm interested in is what's going on with Rey and Kylo Ren, you know, and Luke and all that. So I'm not, this whole fucking business over in, you know, this chase. Oh, we're running out of fuel. Fuel? Okay. you know, why aren't those giant Star Destroyers launching 20,000 TIE fighters at the fucking, you know, what, you know, what, you know, I don't understand it. It's completely, you know, I don't know. Don't know. Why is Vivian on the ship? You know? Oh, I don't know. You know. Anyway, yeah. So it kind of, I was very, very like, oh, what have I just seen? There's some real good stuff and some real stuff I didn't like.
Yeah. I think that the thing that's bothered me the most is that I went into this expecting it to be way better than the last film that had come out a couple of years ago. And just being sold on it, and yeah, I can't wait. And the only thing I was remotely worried about was them killing off Luke Skywalker, which they fucking did. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that very briefly. Are you happy with the way he went out?
No.
Or happy's probably not the right word. Do you accept it?
I think I already commented on that earlier. So and I fucking hated it. I just thought it was such a letdown. So disappointing.
But the way he went, because he's gone in peace, well, as it were. Got to see the image of two sons as well.
All that kind of stuff is fine. Like the pairing that off with Luke when we first see him in the first Star Wars, that's all fine. I even don't mind the idea, not in this context, not in this scene, but I don't mind the idea of somebody very powerful in the Force being able to force project. That's fine. What I didn't like is the total lack of hero send off. For Luke Skywalker, as I've already said earlier, you know, it's when he walks out of that those huge doors and on his own into the desert. I thought, what a great scene that is, and it, like Ben says, shot beautifully, looks great. And I thought, you know, yeah, this is it, this is what I've come to see. You know, in the film, and just total letdown. You know, but I suppose
on a side note. If you want to know where that Wilhelm scream was, Stephen, it's
there. Oh, man. I wasn't even going to mention it and you brought it up. No, I don't, actually, because then that way maybe I'll never see
He'll spot it anyway. Okay. He'll spot it.
That's where it is anyway.
Oh, it's there?
It's in the duel between Luke and Kylo that isn't a duel.
What, fucking what? Luke makes the Wilhelm scream?
No, Kylo does. It's buried in the mix when he makes his first
dive. You've
got
to be fucking kidding me. Nope. Really?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's fucking embarrassing. Kylo, oh, my God, that's fucking embarrassing.
Anyway.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem with having Luke, right, I think I was thinking about this over the weekend, actually, and this whole idea of, you know, why am I feeling this way about this film, and why am I feeling this way about Luke and his character arc? Is it because I'm just nostalgic about, you know, the Luke Skywalker that I know, or is it something else, you know? And the one thing that I had to kind of admit to myself was that, obviously, you know, because of the passage of time, you know, our time, you know, because of the 30 years or whatever, 35 years, you know, we just are not able to see the apex of that character. You know, we're just, because it's just not, they didn't make that film, you know, and and so we are having to deal with the fact that he goes from, you know, this Jedi who discovers himself and bests Darth Vader and saves his father, and all this stuff that had the culmination of you know, the downfall of the Empire at the end of Jedi, and then we have to fast forward to this curmudgeon on an island, you know, and I kind of think, now, do I hold anyone responsible for that, or is it just the way it is because of the fact that we didn't get the movies in between? You know,
I think we're well within our right to question it, in the sense of, why do writers think this way when there is a passing of time and there is a beginning of younger characters? Why do we have to treat older characters in that way, in the sense of either being in a sequel or it being a long time down the road? And you know, we've all discussed this when we talked about things like Ghostbusters 2, and suddenly they're all bummed out on life. Mm. And you're like, why? Why aren't they fucking happy and living it up? Because it's boring writing to have your characters happy. But I think, well, why can't you have them start happy in the film and then something bad happens?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't give us the bad shit's already happened to them and they're just miserable pricks until the end of the film. And then you kill them off to make way for new characters, because what are these new characters giving us? Sweet fuck all, apparently, in this film.
Well, this is one of the things something that I didn't, I'm not sure I mentioned it at the time, maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but something that was, that we may have touched upon with Force Awakens was this idea of, we missed the great romance as well, you know, we missed the whole thing with the, you know, that's over.
Yeah, exactly. It's all gone, they're divorced, they've got a they've got a son that's fucking tearing across the universe, killing people, mass murdering son, and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because it's like, can I know? But I said to you, when before Force Awakens comes on, that, you know, the last chance to watch the original trilogy, guys, before they're changed forever. And that's even more so the case with Luke here. Because it's like, after that, he's going to be happy for a short space. Well, I guess for a 15, 20 years, maybe, depending on how old Kylo is, because it was when he was an adult when this change happened. So it wasn't too far in the past, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So there is a longer, happier period than we thought, perhaps. Han and Leia maybe only split up in the last sort of few years. How long has Kylo Ren been on his rampage? Do we know what the time period is?
It's not clear, is it? No. I don't know.
Yeah, but considering he's quite high up in this First Order or whatever the hell they're called, you know, it has to be at least 5 years, I would have thought, at the very least. Maybe 10. So maybe he's supposed to be like 18 or something in the flashback, and now he's late 20s or early 30s or something. So,
whatever.
But yeah, it's unsatisfying, and I think it's really disrespectful to people that grew up on it, to assume that we'd accept that, or to assume that younger audiences will give a fuck. I'm sure if you made Luke the hero still, or if he did something heroic to the tune of what Sean wanted, then both sets of audience members would be happy, us and the younger crowd. I think people would just be happy full stop.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you don't have to kick your new characters to the sideline. You know, it won't fail if you do that. Sorry, is what I mean. But if you do kick your established characters to the sidelines and do away with them, then it can fail. And I think in this case, it has failed, despite Mark Hamill's best efforts to do it. But even he said, he was surprised at what Rian Johnson had done for the character when he read the script. He was surprised that he said, "Really? Do you see Luke this way?"
Yeah.
And it took him a while to come round to it. when playing. And well, I guess just play.
I don't think he has come round to it at all.
He certainly gave it his go.
He does give it 100%. I mean, I think he's very good dramatically. I think he's very, you know, but I just feel that I don't like the character that he's playing, you know, in the same way that I have heard that he didn't like it either. But he gave it a good, you know, his you know, most professional approach, which is great. I mean, it's good to see him, you know, doing that. But like I said, I mean, this is kind of where I suppose the soul farts are gonna fall down on this stuff, because you know, what millennial is going to give a shit? You know, he's just an old guy. It's just Luke. You know, whatever. Yeah, he's an old man now, and he's pissed off, and he's fucked off, and he's on an island,
and
great.
He's decided to separate himself from the Force as well, which really pisses. It really reminded me of Batman in the Dark Knight Rises, where, you know, one of the most anticipated films, and you get an hour and a half of no Batman and him just hobbling around with on a fucking cane.
Very good. That argument completely ties into this as well. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? This is not what we want. This is not how we are entertained.
Like you said, Stephen, you want Luke Skywalker at the beginning, and then you want tragedy to hit or whatever, and then he has his doubt, and then he comes back with a bang at the end. That's what you want to see, in a nutshell, you know. But no, we've been robbed of that.
Any other little bits and bobs we want to pick up on? That's a good hour and 20 minutes we've been sort of chatting about this. Any characters? We've talked about all the bad guys, I think. Anyone else want to say anything else about any of the bad guys there? Or any scenes? Any scenes of action? Any settings?
Milking whatever the music? Fuck that thing was on the beach and then drinking it. What was that all about?
Yeah, milking the fucking walrus.
Yeah. Oh, the green milk. Yeah. That's what I... Yeah, because I had a couple of drinks before I saw the film, so I went to the loo a few times. That was one of them. I went to the loo.
You know, when I was sort of contemplating the run-up to this movie and the excitement of going to see a new Star Wars and the excitement of actually seeing Luke Skywalker being a major part of the next film, you know, in the light of having to wait to the very last scene of the first, you know, when I was thinking about that, the first thing that came to mind was I really, really hope that they have a scene where he's milking the tit of a giant alien walrus thing and drinking that warm green milk straight out of it.
Yeah,
you know, that was the first thing that I thought, yeah, that's what we need Luke Skywalker doing.
It's definitely one of
and
that.
Spear pole vaulting as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't mind that bit too much.
Fishing.
Yeah, and living on his island with his nurse-made alien things that look like they're out of kind of dodgy
dudes,
80s,
you know.
I applaud them for the use of practical effects, you know, wherever they could. I guess I could say. Yeah.
Well, speaking of practical effects, I mean, I applaud the use of a puppet Yoda.
Yes, I did.
You know,
yes, definitely.
Yes, although wasn't it
cross-eyed.
Wasn't it quite uncanny valley, though, in some shots, in that you're sort of looking at it and going, I know that's a puppet, which is great. I'm on board with that. Great, nice one. But it's obviously a new puppet because the old one's fucked. Yeah. And they haven't got it quite the same, have they? You know,
I think...
I think I had all those thoughts in the space of 1.5 seconds, and at the end of that 1.5 seconds, I told myself to shut the fuck up and enjoy it for what it
was. Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I
kind of did too. Yeah. But,
and then lightning struck.
Yeah,
yeah, and then he knocked him on the head with his staff.
Yeah. Never mind. All right, then. Right, okay. Right, so we'll do some final thoughts. So give us your final thoughts. But in your final thoughts, I would like you to give me your favourite moment in the film and your least favourite moment in the film, if you can, that you can recall now. The sake of it.
Wow.
Sean, you went first. You go first.
No, I didn't. I just went, wow, shit. I need to really think about that. Okay. Just since we're talking about it, it might not be ultimately my two choices, but
Yep.
I'd say basically all of the space battle business is my favorite action in the film. I thought they were really well put together, really well shot, exciting to watch.
What, every single space battle in the film?
Well, particularly the opening one.
Old Star Wars?
particularly the opening one, I guess.
Right, okay.
I suppose my sort of favourite... trying to think about a character moment that I like, and there isn't one. I like the whole Ray and Ren talking to each other telepathically, minusing the shirtless Ren. I could have done without that, but I thought they were all right. I was well excited when they go into the throne room and Snoke does his bit, and I was even more excited that he meets his demise. So I'd say Snoke being chopped in half was another high point for me. Worst moment in the film. God, there are so many. Fucking the entire casino shit. As somebody earlier said, Finn should have been in a coma for the whole film. Woke up at the end. I think it was you, Stephen. If they did that, and that length of time that shit took with him and Rose was literally removed from the film, and the film was 1¾ hours or whatever, I probably would give it an extra star.
Excellent.
They could have done the R2 trick with Finn. He could have been asleep the whole fucking film, and right at the end there, where they need that code to thing, he could have woken up and gone, "Oh yeah, I used to work on that ship. It's F341117591-."
Exactly.
And they go, "Ah, oh, tip tippity top tip top, brilliant."
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Ben.
Okay, favorite bit. Quite similar. I like the. I like the conversations, the dialogue between Ray and Ren, and in particular the elevator up to the throne room.
Okay.
I like the build up to Snoke's, not decapitation, demise. But whatever the right word is for getting chopped in half is, like that. I like the way his body just sort of plops onto the floor.
That's beautiful.
That was quite well done. And I like the fact that there was a little hand that also got severed, which is, very in keeping with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Least favourite, everything casino world and milking the alien tit. and just the slow.
Is that going to be a new phrase? Milking the alien.
And just that whole setup of them having to chase down this stupid ragtag fleet, and you think, just fucking hyperspace it round the other side. Get another fucking ship.
Head them off at the.
Haven't you heard of triangulation, you cunts? Anyway, so that, and that's it, isn't it? What else do I need to say? I mean, the one final thought, right? Before I saw the film, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if Blade Runner 2049 is going to be my movie of the year, or if Star Wars is going to pip it, And it absolutely, Blade Runner 2049 is my movie of the year. Absolutely.
It's
no
my
question.
Movie of the year as well.
No question. Yeah. So there we are.
Yeah.
What about you, Stephen?
My favourite character moment, like I said, is the moment between R2-D2 and Luke Skywalker. Definitely. Action wise, I actually did like the Laura Dern manoeuvre when she split that fucking ship.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
by hyperspacing through it. That was a terrific bit of visual and sound quality going on there. Really, really enjoyed that. That stuck with me. I enjoyed that a lot. And worst thing is Porgs in the cockpit, smacking about all over the place, right in the middle of what's meant to be a climactic action sequence. It pissed me off. Mm-hmm. Annoyed the living fuck out of me. So, yep, I will be a Porg hater on this one.
Yep.
So I'm going to leave it at that. There are many other things to talk about and pick up on, but, we need more viewings in order to do so. So I will lead the charge with ratings then. So I'll go in reverse order then. So I gave Force Awakens 3.5 for being just a little bit too much of a copy. This one, although it did try to do some brave new things, half of those, well, no, actually probably about 60% of those things fell on their face. But again, it's all going to come down to the rewatch. So the rewatch, when I rewatch it, I don't think my score will necessarily go up. It's a very slim chance of it going up because of certainly there being large sections in the film that just stink, Casino Planet, blah, blah, blah. But there are other elements that I may get used to, that I may
think, okay, fine, I can live with that. So I'm going to play it safe and say 3.5 again. So it's an equal score, but for different reasons.
Mm.
Benjamin?
Now, I seem to remember when we were scoring Star Wars Force Awakens, I remember you took me to task over the fact that I'd given Mad Max 5 stars and I'd given Force Awakens 4.5.
I'd like to know what this has got to do with this.
I'm getting there. And I'd given Force Awakens 4.5, but I'd also get named it as my movie of the year. And you didn't get why how I sort of rationalized that in my mind. Well, so Force Awakens 4.5, this is getting a solid 3.
Right.
That's about as good as I can get with this film. I don't want to take it below a 3. I always remember Sean's, you know, description of how he feels a 3 is. It's not less than a 3, but it's not more. You know, I want to see it again. I'm not going to go and see it 4 times like I did Force Awakens. There's just no way that's going to happen. I will see it a second time if I can, and I'm sure that it will stay a 3.
If you were to review Blade Runner 2049, would you give that a 5?
I'd give that a solid 5. I could not ask for better. Could not ask for more of that.
So that's got a 5, like Mad Max. Mm-hmm. This has got a 3, so there's a good chance that this could still be your best film of the year.
Yeah, no, and there's not a lot of chance of that.
Blade Runner is my favourite film of the year as well, followed very closely by John Wick 2, which I saw near the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's been a fucking trying year, it really has. Sean!
Well, I hate to sort of, you know, not do anything original, but it's going to have to be a 3 for me at the moment.
So depressing.
I think there was an initial when I left the cinema of possible 4-ness until I started thinking about it too much. And but like Ben said, it's not as bad as the prequels. Like as in just taken on its own as a film, entertaining that you watch. I'm more likely to watch this again. Obviously, it's newer, so I would anyway. So I can't move it into 2 and 1 territory because then it's in the same boat as the prequels, which are obviously fucking dreadful. So, I don't think I wasn't on the Force Awakens pod, was I? So
No, you weren't. No, that was Droney. Yeah.
My rating for Force Awakens probably would have been and still is a 4. So to put it into context.
Yeah. Now, I did consider, there were strong elements of here that I thought, was it a 4? Is it a 4? And it was like, no, remember all that shit you in there that you didn't like?
Mm. We've just spent, you know, an hour and a half moaning about it, so we can't really go much
higher. I know. Well, exactly.
So.
It's more depressing to me than the disappointment of what the last one was. Mm. But the last one, at the very least, at the end of that podcast, I said, look, hey, listen, guys, Star Wars is back, right? And we all sort of turned and went, yes, Star Wars is definitely back.
Yeah.
No matter how you feel about the film, Ben and Chris liked it more than I did. It was both in their at the top of their top tens. It was much lower down in mine, but we did say Star Wars is definitely back. Now I'm like, Star Wars is in fucking jeopardy again.
Yeah.
It's still here. The film still has a sort of feel of it, but there may be trouble brewing. On the old Lars homestead, so
I would definitely, I would definitely be more excited for the filling solo films like Rogue One and such. If it wasn't for the fact,
I can't wait forward to Richard Cunningham's solo movie.
If it wasn't for the fact that we're getting a fucking solo movie, if they were going to do something interesting, then
Oh well, we're sorry to come back to you on such disappointing terms, but. Judging by the response out there, a lot of people are feeling a very, very similar fashion. So there we go. Apart from all the critics, obviously, who fucking loved it. I need to knock heads with a few of those to find out what the fuck's going on.
I think Disney has been lining the pockets of a few people, perhaps.
Yeah. But
it's funny. I did watch Kermode's, his review of it, and he liked it. And weirdly, what he liked about it were the same things that we've highlighted as what we like about it as well, but he just left with an overall feeling of liking the movie, whereas I think we've kind of, you know, there are so many demerits that it's the overall sensation is different, But he said the same things we've said in terms of, you know, it was that those character arcs, the characterization, the story of those main characters that he liked, you know. And I was like, yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think the overall effect has been the positive one.
Mm.
You know, it's a 3 for me, you know.
Well, Ben, thank you very much for coming back
You're
to do this. And Sean, thank you very much for cajoling us both into coming back and doing this. You know, we obviously have the fun setting this up with our Skype issues and stuff. But we got there in the end, and there you go. There you have it. Stay tuned.
Next up, solo movies.
Yeah, gosh.